Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I'm here with non-birding Bill.
Yes, you are. How many of these have we done?
And it is our goal to podcast and talk about things that are going on in bird news or things that people are complaining about on the internet, bird-wise.
All right.
You know, making fun of...
Have they started doing that?
What? Complaining?
Yeah.
People are complaining, like, all the time. We complain. That's basically what this podcast is me complaining and making fun of things.
Fair enough.
Actually, speaking of which, I need to ask you a serious question.
Mm.
Do I make fun of new birders? Am I mean to them?
Well, no more than you usually do. I mean, I have some outtakes from last week's episode. Do you want to hear them?
Wait, what? And I tell you another thing about new birders. They couldn't, like, bird themselves out of a wet paper bag. And I just want to take this whiskey bottle and when they, like, tell me they don't know who Bird Talk is, I just want to hit them over the head.
But that's, I mean, that's a baseline there. I mean, it's only rarely that you get worse than that.
But no, I feel like I'm rather welcoming to birders. That aside.
Yes, generally. Generally, I would say you only make you regularly make fun of experienced birders. You typically make fun of younger birders when they're not.
Do I make fun of younger birders? I always try to make fun of like older birders and myself.
No, you point out that they don't. Follow like the rules on listservs and things.
That's
like
not
that.
Younger birders. Yeah. That's just people who don't read the rules on listservs. Well, anyway, I had someone like send an email.
No. I would definitely say that you. As a matter of fact, I would say you are exceptionally encouraging to new birders.
I know, and that's the way I felt. And so this person sent this email saying that I'd made fun of new birders and had a couple of quotes in there, and they referenced which podcast it was from. And I was like, I don't remember being mean to new birders, but it's like, you know, we drink during this podcast. Maybe I was just on a roll. Did. Is that iced tea in that glass?
Yep, as far as you know.
Are you drinking the scotch or are you drinking the Jameson?
I am drinking Jameson.
So am I. I love that. Cheers. Oh my gosh, it's like we're meant for each other.
Uh-huh.
But no, I seriously, I had someone who sent an email saying, and it was like, how dare you, you know, you say, you know, don't you remember what it's like to be a new birder? And went on and on. And I was like, crap, did I make fun of new birders? Because I try to make fun of old birders. So that way new birders feel welcome. Mm. So this person forced me to do the thing that I really hate doing, which is listening to the sound of my own voice.
Imagine how it feels for the rest of us.
Why do people listen to this podcast?
I haven't just
so I listened to that particular podcast. I say anyway and so way too much. You could turn it into a drinking game and get plastered. Sure. And you say like a lot.
Yeah.
We need to stop doing those three words.
I'm not going to put
like
any effort into making this
so
podcast.
So right now, we need to like stop that.
I'm already putting more effort into this podcast than I care to.
Tough toenails.
Tough tip mice for everybody.
Tough tip mice. We have that magnet on our fridge. Yeah. Thank you, birdorable.com.
Yeah.
So I listened to it, and basically what had happened was, if this person is like me and is doing other things while they listen to a podcast... They just heard a thing. Actually, what I was doing was I was making fun of list owners or if you're an admin of a page,
right?
And you constantly have to put out the rules. Hey, everybody, maybe like read the rules and maybe don't like post 70 photos of the birds you don't know or show us 50 photos of a cardinal. So I totally get why people are excited about posting that stuff.
Well, sure.
I say this as someone who posted like really cool photos of robins this week. That's about as common as it gets.
Oh, yeah.
But just don't post them on the birding pages that don't want those photos. Post them on your own page.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I listened to some reader criticism and I took it to heart. So I'm going to try to be...
I think you made two mistakes there.
No, it's like, I don't want to be unwelcoming to new birders. I think they misunderstood what I said. Mm-hmm. But then I think, well, maybe I need to be clear when I'm making fun of someone that I am making fun of someone specific and not new birders. And I make fun of myself.
Eventually, new birders, you will be experienced enough that Sharon will make fun of you.
Actually, you know what's going to happen? There was a birder in Minnesota who's known for their crustiness. So much so.
You have to be much more specific than that.
No. There is one Minnesota birder who's...
All right.
Fantastic birder. Right. I mean, if you go on a trip with this person, you are going to see stuff. And when this person identifies stuff, it's going to be good. And this person is infamous for one day when someone asked this person, well, how did you know that bird was a blank. And this person just was very tired and looked over and said, because it is. And I remember when that incident happened, I was like, okay, that's kind of harsh to new birders. Now that makes a lot of sense to me. So it's like, as you're a new birder, you're going to dislike old crusty birders. But then when you get experience with birding, you're going to be like, oh gosh, wow, that makes sense. But you should still welcome new birders. Anyway, I try to be really welcoming.
I agree that you are.
Did I ever tell you about the time somebody called the bird store? Actually, I called one of my bird store employees because they had called me when I managed this bird store and told me about a bald eagle they saw. I was like, yeah, that's what you would see. This is the area where you would see them. That's great. And then my employee, Melissa, came in and was like, my neighbor called you to tell you about a bald eagle because I told him, like, when he saw good birds that he should let the bird store know. And you weren't excited about it, and he's never going to call and tell you about a bird again. And so since then, I have, like, developed a thing so that when someone tells me that they saw a bald eagle, I instantly go into a, it's great. I even remember when I was a kid.
You know, you sound really insincere when you say that, right?
Okay, no. I suddenly just had a flashback of something that happened when I was a kid. Okay, so the story about how I got into birding is because I saw a Peterson Field Guide when I was 7. I saw a pileated woodpecker, and it said crow-sized woodpecker, and I was like, oh, that's really cool that there's a crow-sized woodpecker. It was my sister Terry's field guide, my oldest sister Terry. She had moved out of her house. She just bought a field guide on a whim to kind of like see what's in her yard. And I really took to the field guide. And Terry's kind of into birds. She's not into birds as much as I am, but she's kind of into birds. And there was like one point when she went out with her family, and I think I was a teenager at this point, and they saw a tree sparrow in a park. And so she called me to tell me after they came back from Brown County State Park that, you know, I was like, and we saw a tree sparrow land in a tree. And it was a combination of me as a teenager being like, well, of course you saw a tree sparrow. That's what you would see in wintertime in Indiana. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, great. Yeah. And it was a combination of me being a teenager and just being like, I have better things to do on the phone than talk to my oldest married sister about what she saw in a park this weekend. And it was also a combination of me being a birder and like, yeah, that's totally what you would see at this point. You have a field guide. You should know this. You should not call and tell me that you saw a tree sparrow. But I remember later that night, we're having dinner and my mom talking to me, you know, Terry was really upset that you weren't excited about that tree sparrow. And I was like, are you kidding me? She's like, you could pretend when your sister calls to show a little enthusiasm. So this is something that I have been so I really try at this age to, you know, when someone tells me something, to just be like, I focus on their enthusiasm, not on the bird. Mm. Unless it's something like somebody posted today, a picture they thought was a lump in a cemetery. And then when they took the picture and looked at it later, it was a bittern in a cemetery. That was cool.
Cool.
Call me with your bitterns in cemeteries. Don't call me with your tree sparrows in a park in the wintertime. No, seriously. If you see me at a bird festival and you want to tell me that you saw a tree sparrow in the wintertime, I'll be happy for you.
You're going to get that so much now.
You know, you want to know what I'm going to get? Mm. I love non-birding Bill. Is he here? So if someone comes up to you and tells you something birdy, what are you going to do?
I haven't the slightest idea. Well, it's not going to be my reaction when you tell me about birds.
Please don't laugh at them like you laugh at me. It's brown. It's the same brown. It's still, the lark sparrow is still, I remember we were in Pho 79, that Vietnamese restaurant, and I showed you this bird and you just started laughing and I was like, I don't understand. This is very different from the other sparrows I've
seen. Bird.
It's a lark sparrow. It had a mark in the center of its chest. And it wasn't like a song sparrow that has all the streaking around it. It's a blank chest with a spot in the middle. I remember I was like, this is a bird. Bill's going to understand why I like sparrows. And I show that to you. And you just started uncontrollably laughing.
I'm laughing now.
I know. It's adorable. It's one of the reasons why I love you.
The browniest bird ever.
I know. And you kept saying, it's just brown.
All right, let's move on to the news.
What do you do when I show you a new brown bird that I saw now?
I'm unsurprised at this point.
It doesn't, no, you have what I have when people tell me about a bald eagle. Yeah. Is that yeah, you get, yeah, you just did it. I love it. You just did the thing where your eyebrows raise and your head cocks.
Sullivan
and,
nod.
Yeah, you do the Sullivan nod. Yeah. Do you want some wine with that?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to tell you one other thing.
All right.
So I just had a good friend over tonight who I have led tours with in the past, and she's been doing some hardcore hawk banding. And she also, as a day job, works at a raptor facility. Mm-hmm. And doing the type of tours we do, you're just used to when a bald eagle flies over, the people next to you, you know, it's like their neck suddenly snaps. And they're just like, oh, bald eagle, yeah. And so, you know, an eagle's flying over and she looks up and starts to say something. And the guy next to her, who is a very experienced birder, was like, ah, sky carp. We thought it was hilarious.
Sky carp?
Because bald eagles are really common. And they're big.
They're not that common.
We saw a bald eagle today walking outside of our apartment building.
I have said this before and I will say it again. Birders are crazy. You care about little brownie birds. If I told you there was a... I saw a sparrow. It looked kind of different, but I can't explain why.
OMG.
You would be out the door. It would be a Sharon-shaped cloud slowly dissipating. But a bald eagle is not exciting.
Don't get me wrong. I appreciate bald eagles when I think about as a kid that this may be something I might be lucky enough to see in my lifetime. Yeah. And I mean, it is now, I don't want to say it's a trash bird. But it is something where if I can wake up in the morning and think, I want to see a bald eagle today, I could see one in less than 45 minutes.
I've said this before, I will say this, it's this whole Pokemon thing. You guys only care about birds if they're rare.
Okay, so instead of calling bald eagles Skycarp, should I call them Magikarp?
No, you should not.
Carp.
Because they're not that common. It's the sparrows that are common.
No! OMG! We have fox sparrows! Oh, I just had...
I want you to step outside of yourself for a moment and think about this person who is so excited about fox sparrows, but not about bald eagles.
Have you seen a fox sparrow kick?
You will never see a commercial where they show a fox sparrow gliding over a lake to capture a fish to inspire you to, you know...
Okay, first of all, donate for something. A fox sparrow can't glide over a lake.
God.
It's a powered flight bird. It's not a gliding bird like a bald eagle.
This is... all right, let's get to the news. This is a fruitless avenue of investigation.
Anyway, I pointed out a bald eagle to you today.
You did, and it was very cool.
All right, I have to get something off my chest because this is driving me nuts. USA Today and something called 10 Best. Okay. Apparently, I'm just saying that I guess they're just like compiling top 10s of everything because, you know, that's a thing now.
Yeah, that's all anybody reads is lists.
It really is. Lists are very... Why isn't listing cooler? Anyway, so they're doing the...
Top 10 shades of brown. Okay. Brown. Really brown.
I'm going to have to do
brown
some of this without incriminating. So they're doing the top 10 bird sites.
Okay.
And you can vote once a day for these sites until, what is it, like November 10th.
All right.
And so the first day that this happened, I went to look at the sites. And I'm looking at all these, and there are things like there's McGee Marsh in Ohio, there's Cape May, New Jersey, there's Central Park, New York, there's the Everglades in Florida, there's Alaska, there's Hockridge, Minnesota. Anyway, I'm looking at this.
Oh, so these are birding locations.
These
not
are the
birding
top
websites.
10 birding locations. And there are several of them on here. And I'm looking at all these and I'm like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. And I'm like, well, for me, it's got to be the lower Rio Grande Valley. The Rio Grande Valley in Texas is hands down the best birding spot. The first day, it wasn't even in the top 10 in voting results.
Okay.
And for the last several days, it hasn't been in the top 5.
Okay.
And one of the states, one of the places that was in the top 5, I think today it finally got knocked down, was Dauphin Island in Alabama. And I'm like, why is Alabama even under consideration? Alabama, you're a lovely state. I visited you and I've seen some nice birds. It is not a state that I would think is a birding hotspot. And actually, when I'm looking at the list that's been compiled here, Hockridge, Minnesota, you're really nice, but if you're going to think amazing birding in Minnesota, what you're going to think is Zaxenbog, which is near Hockridge, Minnesota. But I feel like whoever compiled this list was like, oh, Hawk Mountain Sanctuary in Pennsylvania is going to be on here. We have to put in Hockridge in Minnesota because, like, well, it gets more hawks. It gets more birds flying over than Hawk Mountain does, but Hawk Mountain gets all the publicity because it has better PR than Hockridge, Minnesota. But anyway, so it's messed up to begin with. But how is Rio Grande Valley not even in the top five. I'm pretty sure Alabama is paying people off
to be in the top five. There's not that many people who live in the Rio Grande Valley versus this. I'm sure that this place in Alabama has organized and is getting. If people can vote once a day for, however many days, I'm sure they've gotten people organized and are just voting multiple times.
That's clearly what's going on with McGee Marsh.
Right.
Because McGee Marsh, don't get me wrong, McGee Marsh is fantastic, but I know the Kaufmans live there. Mm-hmm. And the Kaufmans are excellent at mobilizing people and getting them to vote on stuff. I'm not saying that's bad. I love the Kaufmans, and I have voted on things based on things that the Kaufmans have told me to vote on. But it is criminal that the Rio Grande Valley is not in the top five. I would love for the Rio Grande Valley in Texas to be number one. Because, okay, here's the thing. I've been to McGee Marsh. McGee Marsh, I've been to it in both the peak of migration and when it's not all that great in migration. I mean, when migration isn't going on. You can always see birds there. It's pleasant. It's a nice experience. During migration, when it's insane, you can see crazy birds, but you're surrounded by tons of people. And if being in a sardine can is your thing, that is cool. But the birds that you can see at McGee Marsh, you can see at a lot of other places without the crowds. But McGee Marsh's specialty is really only during migration. The lower Rio Grande Valley is spectacular no matter when you go.
But how many people have been there, which versus McGee Marsh, which is in,
I would argue Central more Ohio. People have been to Rio Grande Valley than have been to McGee Marsh.
Well, then they're not.
And the other thing is, people have gone to McGee Marsh and I saw a lot of birds, but that was a lot of people for me. Mm-hmm. Or people are like, that was a lot of birds and that was a lot of people. It was a great time.
But it's, okay, continue.
Everyone I know who's gone to the Rio Grande Valley has always been like, holy crap, that was fantastic. I have to find a way to go back there again.
Well, it's also the people who are reading USA Today or getting information about USA Today. And this is not, there's no prize for this, right? It's just...
Anyway, if you're listening to this podcast, go and vote on whatever you think is your favorite.
It's an online poll on you. It's not,
It's going to be in USA Today. List. Non-birders are going to read this. And non-birders who are like, I'm thinking about getting into this birding thing.
Yep, that's exactly what's going
and
to happen.
And non-birders that are listening to this podcast, McGee Marsh is great in May. McGee Marsh is pleasant the rest of the year. Everyone else, Rio Grande Valley is fantastic year-round. It's super hot in July and August.
Right.
But the Rio Grande Valley, it needs to be in the top five. I would love for it to be number one. I just don't think we have the mobilization that the Kaufmans have.
This is turning into a Chicago voting.
I'm in a rare position. So when I was a kid, I would be looking at this list and just drooling. Because I'd be like, came into Jersey, Maine, oh my God, going to Sanibel Island in Florida, oh, the Platte River. Now I'm looking at this I've been there. Haven't been there, but know enough about it. Been there. McGee Marsh is great. If I had my choice between McGee Marsh and Rio Grande Valley any time of the year, it would be Rio Grande Valley.
All right.
But McGee Marsh is fantastic. I don't want people to think that you shouldn't go to McGee Marsh. You should go to McGee Marsh during migration at least once. And if you are someone who loves crowds, you should go to McGee Marsh a lot during migration. If you're someone who doesn't enjoy crowds but enjoys the McGee Marsh type of migration, there are lovely places like Tawas Point, Michigan and Erie, Pennsylvania. Anyway, go and vote for this. Put some serious birder representation. It was compiled by experts. Who were the experts that compiled this? Let's see. Ooh, Donald and Lillian Stokes of the Stokes Field Guide, which is a really good photographic field guide. Some guy named Jeff LeBaron. Oh, Jeff LeBaron. I should actually say that with a little more verve. He's a consultant for Audubon Magazine. This is not the same. Anyway, he's a good... Oh, and the other person that helped compile this was Laura Erickson of Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
She's my bro.
All right.
Anyway, I have a hunch that Laura Erickson probably fought for sex in Bog.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of became a thing of, well, you can only have one place. She probably listed four or five places from Minnesota. And they're like, you can either do one or none. And so she chose Hawk Ridge.
Right. Well, I would imagine more people know about Hawk Ridge than know about sex in Bog.
Anyway... Why am I getting so wrapped up in a USA
Today? I haven't the
today?
Slightest idea, frankly.
It just really, I was just really pissed off for several days that Alabama was in it. And Alabama listeners, please let me understand that I know you have a good state with a lot of birds. It's not like a Cape May, New Jersey.
Do you remember that episode of 30 Rock where they're watching the DVD where you can vote for the characters in the movie by, you know, paying a dollar to text the number to a phone?
Wait, wasn't that Milf Island?
No, that was a horror movie, but like they had
when they were in Connecticut.
And Liz
yeah.
was like, "How does this work? This isn't even like this is a movie. The votes don't matter." And she like got super upset that like another character might win. So this is exactly what's going on
this
here.
Is what's going on.
If anything, this will raise the profile of birding sites around. I think it's just I don't see why this. Well, I guess voting gets people emotionally involved. This could have just been a list of great birds.
Do you want to know
places.
How involved I've gotten?
Not really, but I get the feeling you're going to tell me.
So I have my laptop.
Yeah.
And I also have my computer at the National Park Service.
Right.
I'm voting on both every day.
That's okay. You're going to be arrested by the bird cops now. The birding election committee.
It just bothered me that Alabama was in the top five in the Rio Grande Valley,
was
it?
Do you have any idea how crazy you sound?
And I'm looking Most at of some the time. Of the things on here. Oh, Big Bend is... Okay. Texas is on here so many times. But the other thing is, like, Cape May, New Jersey is on here. And the other part that I'm conflicted with is that I know a lot of colleagues who work. Oh, my gosh. And I'm to the age where I can say I know a lot of colleagues who now run these organizations. We're no longer just working for these organizations.
Sure.
You know, like, Dave La Puma. He now runs Cape May. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, Cape May is great. But I don't know if I would put it as number one. Here's my thing about Cape May. I'd read a lot about Cape May and I'd heard a lot about it. And a lot of people I know now who work in the birding industry, you know, all got their sea legs birding wise at Cape May. And you go to Cape May and it's like, yeah, you got a lot of birds here and you're in this like seacoast town. And you see some crazy things like 1 million robins fly over. It's not the Rio Grande Valley. It's not where I can just go and fly in and have some tequila and then roll out of bed the next day and get like Paraki and Green Jay, Kiskadee, Green Kingfisher, Ring Kingfisher, and then go have some really great lunch and some barbecue and then go out and like get a whole bunch of scissor tail flycatchers.
Okay, well, I have a question.
And a rose throated Bacard. Yeah.
Do you realize you're still talking about this? USA Today online poll.
I haven't even gotten to my issues with the Central Park.
Thank God
being
it's
listed.
Not a who wore it best poll.
Anyway, birds. People, please vote. You can vote once a day between now and November 10th. Pick your spot. I suppose since being from Minnesota,
I should point out there's probably a national election coming up that you might want to vote in as well.
Can I say how irritated I am at one of our former neighbors who was like helping with the political system, and now I get calls from that political party?
No, you cannot. Let's move on.
But I am going to say that I am calling when they call. Yeah, I'm already voting for you. Stop.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me.
Let's move on.
Never help your friends who are helping. We're helping in politics.
Yeah. Don't get involved with actual politics. Instead, use multiple computers to vote for best birding site on USAtoday.com.
Here's the thing. Can I get involved with politics without them getting my phone number and calling me?
You can give them a burner number. Anyway.
That's totally what I'm just going to give them your phone number from now on.
Great. Do we have another story or are we going to talk about this for 50 minutes?
So many stories.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we're spacing out our time well.
Okay, so another owl has gotten stuck in somebody's grill. And when I say grill, I mean the grill on their vehicle.
Okay.
And because this has to be something that's been happening for decades since the car was invented and has had a grill.
Right.
Because the stories are popping up, and now what's different is that people have smartphones, so they can take pictures and video and send it right away. So it's another case of a great horned owl flying across the road and getting caught in someone's grill, and someone trying to get the owl out of the grill and being too afraid because the owl is going to bite them, and so they call the police and pictures are taken. The owl is still alive and is most likely going to be released by the Raptor Center, but it seems to happen a lot in Minnesota.
Cool.
Anyway.
Now, is it because it's a dark space that the owl goes into that it just seems like a nice hidey hole?
No.
It's happening because the owls are hunting and flying across the road and paying zero attention that there are cars driving at 50 miles an hour.
Okay.
But here's the crazy thing. If you have an SUV, look at the grill of your car. Note how skinny that grill is.
Sure.
The owls are getting sucked into that, and they're having relatively few injuries. Most of the time when this happens, the person tries to get the owl out, and it flies away, seemingly with no consequence.
Sure. I would assume you could just open the hood, and the owl will get out.
No, because like the way the grills are set up, the owls are kind of like blocked. Oh, so you have to either remove the grill.
Okay.
And if you don't know how your vehicle works, you have to have a mechanic do that. There was like a woman in Florida who thought she hit an owl and she didn't see it. And so she just continued to drive home. She's like, oh, I guess I didn't hit it.
And then an owl burst from her face 2 weeks later.
Oh, God, don't talk about that leech story. I hate that leech story. So, but no, she goes out to her car the next day, and she just happens to walk in front of the grill, and she notices two big yellow eyes looking at her. And she's like, oh, crap, I did hit that owl. How did it get through my grill? It's amazing. It just kind of gives you an idea of how crazy small birds are, how flexible their skeletons are. So if you want to see some disturbing pictures of great horned owls and grills, you can follow the link that I've posted from MinPost. Oh, right. No, this isn't MinPost. This is Bring Me the News. Anyway, this owl is fine.
It may be from MinPost because Bring Me the News is not a news creator. It's a news aggregator.
Yeah, I know. Everyone I know who works in news hates Bring Me the hates Bring Me the News. But for me, as someone who reports on the news, I love it because it tells me which sites I need to go to for more information.
Sure.
Anyway, Bring Me the News is great for this link because it has a lot of pictures of owls caught in grills.
All right.
Anyway, you're going to hit owl. And I posted this to the Bird Chick page, and a lot of people are like, I didn't mean to hit an owl, but I did. And yeah, I got caught in my grill. So if you get a great horned owl caught in your grill, if you want to try and remove your grill and take the owl out, because it seems to be the common thing is that everybody's like, the owl was going to bite me, and I was worried it was going to bite me. Owls aren't going to bite you that hard. They're not really going to break the skin. Don't worry about an owl beak. Worry about their talons. But if you have to, if you're dealing with an owl, don't worry about their beak. It might pinch a little, but it is, of all the birds out there that it's going to hurt you, that's one of the ones that I wouldn't worry about. All
right. Next story.
Oh, you are so trying to move us on.
I'm sorry. Were there deeper issues with owls caught in grills that you wanted to discuss?
Oh, now we're going to talk about
a deep issue. Is there a poll about not top 10 owls caught in grills?
So we're going to talk about something that I posted and then you posted to my wall.
Sure.
And that is about the ortolan bunting.
Oh, yes.
So the ortolan is a brown bird. It's a type of bunting. Mm-hmm. Think indigo bunting.
Okay.
Basically, it's a type of sparrow. Used to be...
Really fascinating story, huh?
Sorry, I was suppressing a yawn.
Yeah.
Maybe you could edit that out.
No, I don't think so. Let's move on.
I would like the record to show that I was not yawning because of a brown bird. I was just yawning because I was going to have to talk about old white men complaining about something.
Something we never do on this podcast.
I enjoy the French. Why are you laughing?
Continue, please.
I took French for 7 years. Mm-hmm. I love French cuisine. Right. I had a great time eating a lot of French cuisine in France last year.
Okay.
But there is, according to Michael Gerard, there's at least one quintessential dish missing. The ortolan, a tiny songbird that gourmands, including former President Francois Mitterrand, used to covet. And basically, with the ortolan, you would cook it in such a fashion that you would eat the whole entire bird,
like an amiebi. What was it?
You were thinking amiebi.
Amiebi, yeah.
So if you're at a sushi restaurant and you order ebi, you get a cooked French tail, or
not cooked? It's a raw.
No. Ebi, ebi itself.
Right.
You order that. That is cooked shrimp on sushi rice.
I don't think the shrimp is.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you order just ebi.
Right.
But if you order amiebi, then you get the raw tail, and then you get the head tempura'd.
Right.
So if you're someone who doesn't eat sushi very often, if you want to really gross out your friends, order amiebi, because you're going to get the tail raw on nigiri rice.
Right.
And
which
then
is what I was saying before.
But no, if you just order ebi itself, that's going to come cooked.
Okay.
Because I order Ebi on a regular basis. And Ebi is cooked. Okay. Ama Ebi is not cooked.
All right.
Except the head is cooked, but not the tail. That's where it gets confusing.
Sure. Anyway, so.
Anyway, so.
The whole bird is cooked.
Yes.
I assume they take the feathers off.
Yes. And apparently there's also, because the way this bunting stores fat, it's supposed to be some of the most delicious fat we've ever had.
Sure.
Which I find hard to believe because I love fat.
Right.
I eat fat as much as, I mean, marrow is a standard in our home. We got the praise of a Whole Foods butcher the other day when I said, I see this is on sale. Give me the fattiest piece you have. Because the flavor is in the fat. That's what my mother taught me.
Exactly.
It really is. Don't be afraid of fat. Mm. Life's too short. Fat tastes great. Just spend some more time on the treadmill.
So back to the story we were talking
about. So apparently, Ortolan buntings have a fat that is so mind-blowingly fantastic. Mm-hmm. It has a slight hazelnut flavor that, you know, they want to eat this. But because the Ortolan has been declining in population, it was banished from French restaurants in 1999.
It's an endangered species.
Well, here's the thing. I was looking at the BirdLife International page about the Ortolan.
Okay.
It's not that endangered compared to other species. It might be in places in France. And there has been significant population decline. This is one of those things. We're kind of at that point like you would be with the, if we had had the internet back when the passenger pigeon was still alive.
Okay.
The passenger pigeon was a bird that existed in the millions.
Right.
And so people are like, we're going to eat this because it tastes good, and we're going to shoot the crap out of it because it's easy to do. There's no way it's going to disappear because the flocks are like clouds, like storm clouds when it comes over. So the Ortolan bunting population started going down. And in significant numbers. It's like, we're going to take this off the menu because you guys don't need to be eating this. And there are plenty of other really tasty things to eat in France. OMG. The cheese alone. And now the French chefs are like, hey, I think the Ortolan is coming back. The population isn't that bad. And hey, if we use this Canadian study, there's really like 30 million out here. And let's bring the Ortolan back. And the Ortolan is declining. It's especially declining in France. And it's like, yeah, you're a contributing factor. It shouldn't be brought back. The whole thing that really freaks me out about the Ortolan bunting, though, is the way they eat it.
Yes. Oh, yes. That was very disturbing. Yes. That was actually how I discovered this. Somebody posted a picture of people eating them.
Tell me about this.
So, as I learned, that what you do is you... It's essentially like a McNugget. You eat the whole thing at once. You put the whole bird in your mouth and eat it. And to help you capture the aroma of this, you eat it leaning over your plate with a napkin over your head.
And there are some who argue that that ritual is to hide your shame of eating this. I feel like there's a whole fetish quality that's built into the Ortolan.
They mentioned that in the article. So it's like some say it's so God can't see you, you know.
Yeah, eating this thing. And is that what it's become? It's like... Oh, gosh, in France, we have nothing tasty to eat. So you can't have this Ortolan bunting anymore, so you have to hide under a blanket.
No, well, I mean, obviously we should look at the science of it. I mean, this is something that we've discussed before, because while I'm in favor of protecting endangered species and threatened species and things like that, there are certain groups that once an animal is placed on the endangered species list, they work as hard as they can to make sure that it never becomes delisted because of the protections it gets.
Yes.
So, yes, we should look at the science and see if maybe this Canadian study is right and the animal is actually coming back and
here's the thing. Like I don't... That. See, that's what raised my hackles about reading this article in the New York Times was this French chef was quoting a Canadian study and was like, so I started Googling. I could not find a Canadian study.
Okay.
But I did go to BirdLife International... Because I feel BirdLife International is a pretty reputable organization. I like a lot of what BirdLife International does. One of the things that they do is, like, when a population is in decline or is critically endangered or just, you know, on the verge of extinction, they work really hard to work with the locals to bring that bird back and do it in a way that the locals understand rather than it being like, hey, white people say that you shouldn't get rid of this bird. And... according to BirdLife International, this bird has a pretty extensive range. Maybe it doesn't have that much of an extensive range in France.
Well, I'm saying we should actually rely on the science. Because, I mean, in their defense, the chefs are doing their job. That's their job.
They're trying to sell the ortolan bunting as the most tasty bird out there.
They're trying to preserve... Well, I mean, the French have a very, you know, a very... an especially strong sense of preserving their culture, and this is part of that, and this is... that's their job. If this is the most delicious thing in the world, and they think the birds are coming back, they're trying... Actually, and I think I mentioned this before, too, I have a friend who was talking to me a few years ago about the idea of preserving animals by making them foodstuffs, like the bison. The reason why the bison is back now is not that people said, oh, we need bison. It's because bison has become the quote-unquote healthy alternative to beef. And so that's, there are people who are raising bison herds, not because they like them, but so they can slaughter them and sell the meat. But the bison is becoming a sustainable herd now.
Can I tell you one of the
now.
Crazy things about bison that I've learned?
What's that?
The tastiest bison I ever had mm-hmm. was like a bison rib steak.
Right.
And it came from a farm that had a bison feedlot. And sure. bison weren't meant to be in a feedlot like cattle. Right. They were meant to be running around. And it was like, oh, you were stationary bison, and bison were meant to be running around.
They are like in the areas, but they are in the areas they're supposed to be in, and they're wandering, running around. I think part of the reason why I don't particularly care for bison is because it's supposed to be the healthy alternative to beef, is that they're giving us low-fat versions of bison.
Yeah, really, high-fat versions of bison are what you want.
Yeah, I'm sure that if I got a fatty cut of bison, it would be amazing, but I actually don't care for
That's been my burgers. Issue with all the alternative meats that I've eaten, yeah. when I've eaten, like, ostrich and elk, and it's like, mm-hmm. this is low-fat. And it's like, even when I've gone to Whole Foods, it's just been like, this meat looks great. Do you have, like, the untrimmed meat?
Yeah.
Give me the fat.
Yeah, no, I mean,
fat's
people have
not
this...
like it's killing you.
No, it's. Yeah.
I'd rather have fat than high.
Well, I think it needs.
Corn syrup.
I think fat needs a rebranding because, you know, I mean, this was. I remember a film strip when I was a kid in like health class. It said, "Fats don't make you fat," but no, that's there's no
it's,
way that
it's
you can't,
the sugar that
there's
makes you fat.
No way that you cannot separate that in people's mind is that if you eat fat, you become fat.
If you're on, if you listen to this podcast and you're afraid of fat, I just want you to tell yeah. you, try some fat.
Yeah.
Just fat off the... That's not what makes you... Because, like, gosh, way back when we did
Well, I mean,
Atkins,
there's definitely a lot of calories in it. It's not the best thing in the world for you. But, yeah, you can have, you know...
But, I mean, like, when we eat fat, like, mm-hmm. like when we have bone marrow night,
mm-hmm.
we have it with salad. You know, sure. it's not like we're having bone marrow with pasta. Or we're having bone marrow with
oh,
French fries.
Oh, bone marrow with pasta. That sounds fantastic. Let's do that.
But I remember, like, when I was in Portugal recently... And then in a lot of European countries I've been to, because mm-hmm. everyone's like, oh, Europe is way more healthy. They give you French fries with everything.
Oh,
or they
yeah.
call
no,
them
there's...
frites and chips. And it's like, can I just have a salad with this? Is that okay?
Yeah, we're
Can
we're
I have
on
some
this...
steamed vegetables, maybe?
And I think that, I mean, and we've talked about, you know, Middle America and their food. And I think the problem with a lot of the food that most people think is bland is that there's no fat in it. People get steaks that, oh, I'm going to have a porterhouse steak, and there's no fat on that steak, and it's not, you know.
So let me just say, we're going back to the ortolan bunting. I have mixed feelings about the ortolan.
Uh-huh.
If it's in decline in that area, if it's in
right.
decline in France, because
right.
part of the problem is that now that it's been made illegal, mm-hmm. people are still poaching it. And so even if you can't have it in a restaurant in France, you can have it in your own private home.
Yeah, I think the
And I wonder if this is like, what if someone told you and I, okay, because mm-hmm. let's be clear. We probably eat vegetarian. I feel like you and I eat vegetarian 75%, or maybe
no.
just I do.
No. A complete vegetarian meal, or are you saying you eat a complete vegetarian meal, or vegetables are 75%
no,
of the meal?
No, I feel like 75% of my diet, when I'm not traveling, is vegetarian. Like this morning, I had oatmeal. And
okay.
for lunch, I had... Okay, today was a bad example because we had Tavani's.
Yeah.
But no, I'll eat like a quesadilla with just beans, salsa, and cheese.
And then for
dinner, I'll have meat in that.
No, I have meat virtually every meal.
Do
except
you have meat every meal?
Sometimes for breakfast, I will have just like cereal or like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay.
But like, I'll often have like bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Okay, because I feel like for my meals when I'm not traveling. When I'm traveling... I'm just trying to find sustenance.
Sure.
But when I'm home, breakfast and lunch, I feel, are vegetarian. Like, I tried that vegan before six book. Mm-hmm. I cannot be vegan before six.
Vegan is very hard to do.
But I can have vegan. I can do vegan for lunch. Mm-hmm. But for breakfast, I just really like butter and cheese. But I feel like, in general, if you don't force me to be vegetarian, I can be vegetarian 75%. But so, anyway, take that out of the equation. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think. Our most favorite dish, I feel like, between the two of us is bone marrow.
I wouldn't say that we eat it very often. It's definitely one of my favorite things to eat.
What is your favorite meat dish?
Do you mean, like, my favorite thing to eat or the thing I eat most often?
No. I'm talking about, what is your favorite meat dish? What is your favorite
No, that's not meat? The question I'm asking. Are you talking about the thing I eat most often or my favorite thing to eat?
What would be the thing where if we had some kind of, like, evil alien overlord and that overlord told you you weren't allowed to eat it anymore?
Some form of beef, I would guess. Either, like, hamburger would probably be it, or, like, steak or hamburger, I would imagine.
Even over epic beef.
Well, that's beef, is what I'm saying.
Just, I need to know. We need to keep this as specific as Ortolan.
Ortolan? Is that the name of the evil overlord?
No, I am Ortolan, humans. Okay, that's like bird, so you get into the whole poultry
Ortolan is not a word, sweetheart.
Ortolan? It is a total word.
Please use it in a sentence.
I want to eat some Ortolan right now.
Oh, that's the name of a thing to eat.
Okay, so
Ortolan. I thought you were trying to say orderly.
Oh, no.
Okay, what is Ortolan?
The bunting we've been talking
about. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, yeah, okay.
God, how much have you had
I'm sorry, I was talking about going back to the beef. I thought you were talking about some kind of beef.
So basically, what I'm trying to do is trying to say, like, the French are saying
the thing that I could never have again.
The would drive me crazy. You would, no, your favorite dish, because that's what these French chefs are trying to say.
No, the thing,
is that this is the best bird to eat.
There are a lot of things that I could, I suppose it might be salmon. Is the thing that I really like if I have it.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
But that might be the best example of this because this isn't something that you have all the time. It's something that you. Okay, so, okay, continue with the.
Okay, so salmon for you.
Right.
So for
salmon.
Me,
well, I mean, we're in that position now where salmon is starting to be overfished.
And, or if you're going to have salmon, right. You're going to have farmed. And salmon is worse than the fish salmon. Right. So this is what I'm trying to equate it to. Because I'm trying to imagine to myself, what if someone said, you can't eat bone marrow anymore because cows are, like, in danger.
Well, I mean, we're getting at that position now. I mean, this is part of the thing. I was watching the documentary that some people know about called Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which is about this Japanese sushi master. And part of the documentary is about how you can't get... It's very hard to find truly great fish for sushi because... Sushi has become so popular that it's served in supermarkets and all these places. So
eat supermarket sushi.
Well, no. I mean, the point is everybody wants all the tuna is being fished because everybody wants it everywhere. Yeah. It's not this cuisine food anymore. It's become commodified. So we're overfishing. And I, you know, I can't help but wonder if... Was the French restaurant market making a big dent in these population, or was it other factors like bad farming techniques or habitat?
So here's, and that's kind of where I'm getting with this.
So how many people are actually eating? It's not like you go into the Paris McDonald's and they have ortolan on the menu.
And this is exactly the point that I wanted to bring up. Because it's like, I'm reading about this, and as they're talking about the whole ritual of, like, putting the, like, napkin over their head to, like, savor it. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the fat. It's like, okay, now you have my attention, because I understand the value of good fat. Because that's one of the things I love about marrow. Mm-hmm. And what would I do if someone told me I could never have marrow ever again? Because I really love, it's not something I can eat all the time. But it's fantastic when I get to eat it. So I was trying to imagine that. And then... I was trying to imagine what it would be like if, you know, the U.S. government said, hey, cows are endangered.
Cows are so endangered.
You can't have any kind of cow, let alone their bone marrow.
That would be hard.
And that, as much as there are a bazillion things that you and I can eat that are super tasty. You and I could have, like, ham steak and macaroni and cheese.
Sure.
And have a great dinner. Or tonight, I made, like, a squash soup.
But it's not a hamburger. It's not marrow.
No, it's definitely not marrow. But is... And that's what I'm wondering with the French. It's like, you know, has ortolan become, like, this whole, like, BDSM fetish?
Well, no.
Because you have the ritual of putting the napkin over your head.
Well, I mean, it's these... I don't think it's... Well, we need to be careful. It's the French. I don't think I'm... And again, this is my ignorance.
The article was specifically talking about French people.
No, I'm saying, is this... The French people are saying, oh, we want... Or is it this these cuisine chefs? Because I just remember the cuisine chefs.
Okay, let saying, me be...
Is this something where suddenly, you know, like, not like McDonald's or anything, but like regular, you know, restaurants that you would go to are going to be serving this bird?
Okay, let's be clear on this.
Or is it
going
to be like a high-end thing?
This is a French cuisine.
Yeah.
The ortolan is not something that I find on the menu in a lot of European countries.
Well, you're not going to find it on any of them. It's endangered.
Well, no. But, I mean, the article was about how these French chefs
sure.
were trying to bring ortolan back onto the menu.
Okay, let me give you, this is an example of what I'm talking about. I read an article a few years ago about these New York, not chefs, but like these, I can't think of the word to use them. They were making their own, they were aging their own, remember if it was cheese or if it was salami. They were doing something
where... I think
where,
it's cheese, because there's been a lot of news about cheese.
But it was something where they couldn't pasteurize because of this process.
It's cheese. Whole thing that was going on in Wisconsin last year.
Well, no, this isn't the thing about the wood boards. This is something about... And I want to say it was like meat, but I'm not sure. I think it actually was meat, because it was like... If the meat was aged properly, there would be a fungus growing on the outside of the container that you used to age it.
Okay.
But according to FDA regulations, you have to, you know, pasteurize and radiate the meat and make sure that's it. But, you know.
There's this whole thing about people. Well, and let's be clear that there have been instances when people have eaten things that have been rotten.
Sure.
And people have died. Yeah. Children have died. I just feel like once you're over 18, you should be able to sign a waiver that says, I know this is bad for me, potentially. There's like a less than 5% chance that I could die from eating this.
I don't know if I agree with that, but you know, I'm weird that way.
Well, now we've gotten into the whole weird area with the ortolan bunting.
So, all right, so here is my opinion on this. We should have more studies to find out how endangered the bird actually is, because... As I have said before, I am in favor of protecting endangered species, but there are people who want to make sure that endangered species are never not protected.
Okay, here's where I'm getting confused, because I am on the Bird Life International website, birdlife.org, which you can find easily by typing in ortolan bird life. And so I'm just looking at key facts.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says current category, it says least concern.
Okay.
So, and it is widespread throughout Europe and Asia. So here we go. Population justification. In Europe, the breeding population is estimated to be in the number... This is probably not going to make people happy who are disliking the ortolan eating. Mm-hmm. 5.2 million to 16 million breeding pairs. Okay. That's not individual. That's all right. Breeding pairs. Equating to... 1,506 million or 48 million individuals.
Okay.
Europe forms 50 to 74% of the global range, so a very preliminary estimate of the global population size is over 21 million or perhaps 96 million, although further variation is needed. So there's a lot of study that needs to be with the ortolan. If there's been an extreme decline in France, that definitely is cause for concern. BirdLife is just talking about the overall population.
Sure. Well, maybe this is something I talked about with the bison. Maybe this is a situation where protection and consumption can come together, where we're not just relentlessly hunting these, but the desire to make sure that this bird is around forever.
Well, and someone brought up the issue on the Bird Chick page on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's like, it would be different if this was a captive population that people are feeding off of instead of the wild population. Because there is very definitely a poaching population in France.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like I have been tempted to try... Okay, I'm going to say frogois is something. Frogois is something where you overfeed a goose to the point where their liver gets very fatty and you make this pâté. And it is a very rich, tasty thing.
Right.
And there's been a lot of backlash about it in the U.S. because in the United States, when we hear about something...
It's seen as inhumane.
Well, no. We hear about an idea and we think, oh, we can totally make that. So in the U.S., when we have foie gras, it's not the traditional methods. It's geese that are already on a farm, and it's like, oh, we can, if force feeding is a thing you need to do, we can totally for, and so it's an industrialized practice.
Sure.
And where foie gras kind of got its thing was geese during migration, they're mm-hmm. loading up on food, they have naturally fatty livers, so when people were shooting geese in migration, both in Europe and in North America, it's like, oh, hey, we shot this goose, and this goose has a super fatty liver. Let's make it into this paste. Oh, my God, this is the best paste ever.
Right.
So in North America, you kind of get the industrial farming. It's like, you want that liver that tastes like that? We can force feed these geese year-round, and we can, like, quadruple that.
Right.
And so it gets into this whole weird area. So I have had, I avoided foie gras for years, but then I had foie gras mm-hmm. from a farm in Minnesota where they did it as nicely as possible. It's good. It's really good. Yeah. I could see how it could be
or like,
favorite
I mean,
thing.
And I hate to bring this, veal. It was like this, okay, a veal is just a young calf, which got transformed into the idea of we're going to keep this animal in a small cage and it's not going to be able
to move.
Well,
that's because
yeah.
you have people who are like, oh, you like this way this tastes? Yeah. Well, that's because we did X, Y, and Z. We can do X, Y, and Z to an extreme
an
level.
Industrial scale.
And
yeah.
an industrial scale. And then it becomes, oh, that's me.
Yeah, I don't have a problem if like, I'll eat a cow. I'll eat a young cow if the cow was able to run around.
Yeah, but you don't want to. But there's.
Yeah, no, you don't. I mean, there's, you know.
So it's just paying attention to where your meat comes from. I hate that we're here, that we have to discuss the differences in how our
yeah,
animal was
I mean,
killed.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Ortolan bunting. There's a whole weird fetish thing with wearing a napkin over your head. I don't think the ortolan is going to go extinct anytime soon. It's definitely something we should watch.
Right.
I don't know if it needs to be on French menus because, damn it, France, you have a lot of tasty things on your menu.
Yeah.
You can live without an ortolan on your menu. No, seriously. Seriously. There's a lot of tasty stuff to eat in France. And I remember, actually, when I was in Paris last year, I went to more than one restaurant asking in French if they had bone marrow, and they looked at me quizzically, and then I, like, went into my Google French keyboard, and I showed them in the keyboard what I was asking for, and I was like, this is what I'm trying to pronounce. And I remember one waiter reading what I was at and then looking at me and saying, you eat that? I'm asking for bone marrow.
No, I mean, if the... Okay, let me put... If there's no... Okay. If the bird is endangered, we should be taking measures to protect it. If the animal is not endangered, they should be free to cook and eat it.
Yes.
Because that would drive
me... If you go by the BirdLife International page,
no, that would
it's
drive me,
not
I mean,
endangered.
Because I'm a liberal hypocrite. As I've mentioned before, I don't have a problem.
I'm a hypocrite, but I'm not a liberal.
I eat meat. I do not want to kill meat, but I have no problem with people who want to hunt. We have a pet rabbit. We were just at a store where they had rabbit that you could
buy. I know,
it's
trying really hard for
like,
you not to look at that rabbit.
I know people
exoskeleton.
Eat rabbit. I know rabbits are nature's food ATM. They exist to be eaten. I don't have a problem with that. I don't want to eat it. I don't want to eat my pet rabbit. I forgot where I was going with this. But it's just like, it would drive me absolutely crazy if, it's like anything. It was like, you know, it's like the whole cheese thing. Like the cheese thing that came up recently where the FDA was going to ban people using wooden boards for
That's
cheese aging.
Stupid.
Which was stupid, but it was like, we're not going to have any exemptions from this because it's conceivably unsafe.
Okay, we need to time out this podcast because our rabbit is chewing books and I am going to kill him.
All right, well, I'm going to talk about this while she does that.
Hey!
While Sharon makes a sandwich out of our rabbit. But it's just like, you know, it's some authority who is...
Do not eat books!
Sharon, there are a lot of books around, and I don't
Your
see...
Your rabbit is being a total dick right now between his litter box and chewing my bird books. He wasn't chewing any of your stupid Neil Gaiman books.
That's because I put them up high where he couldn't get them. But it's this authority who is provably wrong, just saying, we're going to enforce these rules whether you like it or not. And if that is the case, then the bird should be servable.
I think what irritated me about this whole article is, like, it was a New York Times writer.
It was
like,
a top 10 on USA Today.
If only. No, it's like, oh, these French guys, they miss having the ortolan bunting around. And it's like...
They're chefs. It's their job. If you are a chef, it is your job to serve people. tasty food.
It would be different if we were living in a world of food rationing and there was a dearth of tasty things to eat in France. Let me tell you, there are... Even if like something was
eliminated... But if the science doesn't support it, what's the sense of preventing people from eating one thing? What's the difference between killing this ortolan and killing a cow and getting like the best, or like the Kobe beef and stuff? Oh, I don't see why you have to have this special cow. Why aren't we all just eating bison and deer and things
like that? We should be eating with Stacey. Actually, I don't know. The older I'm getting, the more vegetables taste good. I'm sorry.
Okay, knock yourself out.
No, I can't help it. Like this morning, I was like, I don't want to have an egg.
That's fine, but I mean, it's just like, if it makes sense to not eat this, if there's a rational reason, okay, protect this animal. If there isn't,
there may be more of a reason to protect the ortolan. I just happened to go to BirdLife International. It's like, oh, wow, BirdLife International has you at least concerned. There's no way I can argue this other than you guys wanting to eat an entire songbird under a napkin because you feel shamed. Seems kind of weird.
Well, it's not shame. Part of it is the ritual. I mean, it's like when you go to... I mean, okay, let's get back into marrow.
All right.
You go to eat marrow. They give you a special spoon that is designed so that you can scoop out every tiny little bit of fat out of the middle of this beef bone.
I have justified marrow in that everybody else is eating all the, like, quote-unquote normal parts of the cow.
Right.
We're eating the leavings that are... You and I are essentially the vultures
when we eat marrow. It's like, how weird is it that we have, like, a tea bag? They take this leaf and dry it and process it, then you pour it into a glass of, you know, a boiling glass of water, and then put honey in it, and that's the proper way to eat it? How weird is that? That's not something you're intended to
eat. That's like something from the cavemen. Did you not read the whole, like, Gene M. Owl series? I know you read some of it, because you had to sit in the car with me when I listened to some of the audiobooks from the later
series. You're talking about Clan of the Cave Bear, right?
That's Gene M. Owl. That's where tea started. But the cave people.
Yep, I'm sure that they were making yerba mate.
Was inventing so many things.
I'm sure they were extracting mercury so that they could measure the water to 180 degrees exactly.
When Ayla was like figuring out how to domesticate horses and how to do a blowjob, she also invented tea. And if you have not read the Clan of the Cave Bear series, then you think I'm just like...
Again, I am an adult male.
I just want to say for the record... The first book, The Clan of the Cave Bear, is a fantastic book. After that, it's just caveman porn.
Look, all cooking is fetishism. Everybody has, you know, have your recipe, you have to do this the proper way. I mean, this, well, to get into a discussion that we've had before, it's like the whole thing with Thanksgiving is like you have pointed out to me,
God, yes,
that cooking a turkey is time consuming, but a relatively simple process.
Thanksgiving dinner is one of the easiest things to make.
But the reason people get so uptight about it is that everybody has this memory or this idea, yes, of the proper way to do it.
Yes.
So why? I mean, it's like why the heck are we eating? How many times a year, other than like Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas, do you and I eat turkey?
I try to avoid it at all costs because it is my least favorite meat.
Right. But we always have turkey on Thanksgiving.
Because you like it.
Yeah, I do like it, but I like the stuffing, but it is a traditional thing. I mean, that's why we have it. So I could have
another type of bird for Thanksgiving dinner this year, yes, so long as
I'm... If we had like a pheasant with stuffing, I would be fine with that.
Okay, because I have been lobbying for pheasant for years.
That's fine with me.
Now, you understand. But I'm just saying. I just want to... Oh, hold on, because this is public record, sort of, since this is a podcast.
No, it's fine.
So I could make you a pheasant.
You could make a capon as long as there was the same amount of stuffing that I would get with
the
a turkey.
Stuffing is the easiest part.
That's the part, thing. And that's
you are not going to have the same amount of turkey leftovers if I make you a pheasant or a capon.
If I have the same amount of gravy and the same amount of stuffing, I'm fine with that. Those
stuffing
are the two
and
things.
Gravy is easy.
But that illustrates my point, is that those are the things that I want. Those are the foods that I enjoy.
So I could make you ortolan for Thanksgiving this
Please.
Year.
Please. I put the little paper chef hats on its feet. Oh my God. You know what they should do is bring ortolan over to the United States and it would spread as an invasive species.
No, because then we're going to be eating like Lapland longspur and I'm going to feel bad.
But no, the point I'm trying to make is that people have an emotional attachment to the traditional Thanksgiving dinner.
I know. I was just
so having this what I'm saying is the nephew. Chefs and other people who have had this cuisine before have an emotional attachment, and because it's being denied to them, that's only making it stronger.
That was my appointment because I was like, animal fat is great all across the board. Let me just say this: I've eaten animal fat from pigs, cows, chickens, turkeys.
People.
There's not a lot on turkeys. I neither can confirm nor deny that. Fat is great, no matter what animal you get it on. I mean,
this gets into the thing about Japanese whaling, is that people, I've heard people who have had whale sushi.
Blubber? Yeah.
Well, yeah, and they're like,
oh, the whale sushi. Yeah, whale sushi, know someone the Japanese, who's had, yeah.
Well, not even that, but I mean, just like the Japanese, and like, it actually doesn't taste that good. But because people are trying to deny it to them, that makes that emotional
attachment
stronger.
That's what I was wondering about with the ortolan.
Yeah. So...
okay, so here's
the
thing.
Is the memory of it stronger?
There's the whole thing about the whole whale sushi in California.
Right.
But then you have the whole thing about whale blubber up in Alaska with the Inuit.
Mm.
I really want to try that whale blubber with the Inuit.
All right.
I'm not interested in the whale sushi. We know someone who got
maybe
caught...
you can get the whale to come in for liposuction.
No, we know someone who got like caught in a U.S. Fish and Wildlife sting.
Well, he didn't get caught. He ate at the restaurant that was later busted for it.
And told and described the dish that was of question with the United States
government.
He
didn't know that that was what he was getting.
But he mentioned at the time that that was really tasted weird and described to us specifically what it tasted like. And it was like, oh, that doesn't sound very pleasant at all. And that restaurant eventually got shut down for serving whale.
Right.
But when I read about, like, friends that go up to Alaska and hang out with the Inuit and get to have, like, actual whale fat. And if it's with Inuit, and that's what the Inuit are doing, I would try a bite of that, because I like fat. And it's the Inuit way.
We are at 60 minutes. You have you get one more story to discuss.
No!
One more. That's all I'm putting up with. You spent far too much time trying to get me to vote on USA Today.
Okay, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to say a sentence,
yeah.
And then I'm going to go to the next story.
All right.
We have, because the first thing in this podcast is the comic XKCD. Where did they get that name from?
It's a long story. Continue.
Okay. Anyway, it's a geek thing.
Right.
They had a thing about where do birds go when it rains?
Right.
Because that's apparently a thing on the internet.
Mm.
You are not alone if you wonder where birds go when it rains.
They go into trees.
Well, they go into hidey holes.
Right.
If you're a birder, you figure out where birds go.
Where do people go when it rains?
Anyway, if you want something comical,
yeah.
Go to the XKCD.
Right.
That doesn't count.
There's a link on the site. Okay, next story.
The next story is a compilation of birds versus drones.
Oh, yes.
Because, okay, there was like a really hilarious thing last week of somebody who had a drone that was flying around and then a red-tailed hawk, juvie immature, came in.
Knocked the shit out of it.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This article kind of goes along and has done what I've done and then just come, I need to do these things and then pitch these to magazines. It's basically people who have drones and have been flying them and then have either had birds encounter them or have had... like, there's one guy who's like, oh, there's an osprey nest. I have a drone. Maybe I should check out what's going to happen and see what's going on in this nest. And even this guy says in the article, it's like, clearly birds don't like drones and maybe we should respect that.
Yeah. If you ever see... Okay, you've all seen this mobbing, which is when birds... smaller birds are attacking larger birds. And
it can be crows going after great horned owls.
Starlings going after crows, things
like
that.
Yeah, crows get mobbed,
and
too.
And usually you do not see them make contact.
Yes.
Because these birds know flying is hard, and if you get any kind of injury, it might be game over for you. Because birds don't have antibiotics or things like this. If you get a scratch, it could become, you know, septic and you could die. So they try to avoid each other. They get driven out of the territory. Drones, driven by humans, don't have that understanding. So if something hits you... yeah, the microphone's not going to pick that up. So if something hits you, it'll knock you out of the sky.
My absolute favorite one in this compilation... there are several in this... you have everything from, like, geese... like, some guy's just, like, filming his friend golfing.
Right.
And, like, this goose family is like, I don't like that drone. Yeah. I'm going to knock it out of the sky.
Yep.
But my absolute favorite one is someone had tried to develop this drone that actually looks like a bird. They're like, hey, here's our high school, college
experiment. That's the worst idea in the world.
Oh, shit, there's a golden eagle that's attacking it and flying it into this tree to kill it.
You want something that does not look like a bird at all.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to develop a drone, don't have it look like a bird. But...
I think the best, that might cause problems with the animal flying into it. Like the people who did the wildlife camera that was a mirror on all four sides, like a cube.
Mm-hmm.
That might be, if just to make it invisible, not to make it like the
birds
could
see.
What are
you like all pro Viking stadium now? You just want it to be all reflective?
No. I'm saying you should make something, you should make something that the birds wouldn't perceive at all.
That's just not going to happen. Yeah. And I have mixed feelings about all these because like, well, since drones have become a thing, and let's be clear, I bought my father-in-law a drone for Father's Day. But I also know that your dad is sensible.
Right. And the drone isn't going to fly that far. It's not like something you can fly way up into the sky.
It really isn't, but your dad is sensible. So I feel good about giving your dad a drone. But I'm thinking about 7-year-old Sharon, who is given a Peterson Field guide, and it's like, I'm totally into birds. I want to see as many birds as I can. I can't afford binoculars, but someone has given me this drone that has a GoPro camera that's really cool. Mm-hmm. And I can just hook it up to my camera. OMG, there's a red-shouldered hawk of nest up there. Yeah. I just want to see what's going on. And it is, but I mean, you and I know that's a bad idea. Yeah. But 7-year-old Sharon, she doesn't know that's a bad idea. And so your idea is like, I'm big, nasty human on the ground. I'm just going to send my drone up there. Not thinking that my hawk is smart enough to know that, dude, that drone looks like a bad thing. I'm going to kill the shit out of it. And what's most likely going to happen is that red-shouldered hawk is going to kill my drone and just destroy $250 worth of technology. But what is also a high possibility is that it could lose a talent. You know, it could have, like, some serious injury. Not like an initial injury where it, like, knocks it out and it's like, oh, the hawk flies away, it's all okay. Maybe some injury happens to the toes, it's not able to kill shit, so it's not able to provide for its family. Right. I realize that in the grand scheme of things, drones are not wind farms, they're not cats, they're not the Viking stadium. But drones are causing...
No, there's something that we need to be concerned about as they become more prevalent, so...
And it's something we're working on with the Park Service, and it's just... But anyway, I'm really excited to see that the media is onto this, and just be like, hey, birds clearly don't like drones. Maybe respect that shit.
All right.
That's the last story I have.
All right, time to wrap this up. This is Bird Chick Podcast number 179.
And because I find you so sexy, Mr. Steitler, I'm not going to interrupt you.
Great. Thanks for doing that.
You're so hot.
Thanks for doing that, for not doing that.
You're hot.
If you have any questions, you can talk to Sharon on Twitter. She is at Birdchick. You can email her at Sharon@birdchick.com. You can find her on Facebook. And that will be it. We will be back later.